Welcome back to Jesse's Girls. I am your host, Jesse Chambliss, and we have something absolutely scrumptious to serve up for you today. I have been just chomping at the bit to discuss this particular thing, and I knew I needed the right person to discuss it with, someone who would understand, someone who would buy in. And so I am so glad that I found Cam. Cam really found me. From the What I Will Say podcast, she, her pronouns. So Cam, can you just talk a little bit about who you are, how we got connected, and what your podcast is about?
Hi, Jesse. Hi. What do you call your listeners? Are they like all the Jesse's Girls? Are they, do you have a name?
I think like informally, they're the Jesse's Girls, regardless of gender or background or whatever. I've toyed with other things, but for now, you know, I need to like let my star rise before I name my fandom, you know?
Fair enough. Well, hi to the Jesse's Girls. Hi to the listeners. I am Cam. As Jesse said, I host the What I Will Say podcast, and Jesse and I got connected by our good friend, everyone's favorite, ready to be petty and now ready to be romanced host, Tori Harris. Love Tori. She and I do a lot of work together. We're always on each other's Patreons and collabing and all that sort of thing. And she had worked with Jesse. She had worked with me. She told, I've been looking to guests on other people's podcasts, get myself out there. So she told me to reach out to Jesse. And what I really loved about you and your content is like you share this love and obsession and appreciation for like pop music, which I have the same thing going on, right? And my obsession is sort of like, I want to know what is the tea behind the music? Like, who are the muses? What is this song about? What instance is this song about? And of course, there's one particular artist on the map right now that does that to a certain level that all artists do. Of course, they write their music about stuff. But Taylor Swift, of course, like does that to the max. So my podcast, we do a lot of Taylor. I know you kind of steer clear. Who could blame you? A lot of controversy. She has a really intense fandom. Who could blame you for steering clear? But we cover Taylor a lot of my podcast. But like we cover it all, right? We've covered Justin and Selena. We have like a 6-part series. We've covered, you know, some of the different Harry Styles relationships and what's going on there. And so I just have this love and joy that I gain from pop music, and I deep dive like different artists, their muses, and it gets into conspiracy content. I love a little like who's secretly gay conspiracy. So, you know, we go into a lot of that as well.
Yes. And when Cam, you reached out to me and I started to like dive into who you are, I initially was like, oh, I don't want to talk about Taylor if I go on your show because it just makes me nervous because the fans, you know. But when I started like learning about your content, I love how everything really is like evidence-based. You're not just like running with an Easter egg that doesn't have anything behind it. And so I appreciate that about you. I love a little bit of conspiracy-tinged content as long as there's some reality base to it as well, because I think like it's fun as long as you're not like, as long as you are doing it and you're coming from a good place and you're not trying to like spread misinformation that could like harm people, which that's not what I'm saying you're doing. I am mostly speaking to my side of things, which is the Britney conspiracy theorist, which I have gotten into public fights with. And so that is my foray into the conspiracy world, is usually debunking strange things that the Britney AI girlies comment about. That's a whole other conversation that we can talk about offline if you want to hear some fun stories, but
I absolutely would.
I'll share some tea with you for sure. But the subject at hand today is a little festival called Lilith Fair. Now, if you're listening to this and you have never heard of Lilith Fair, don't know what I'm talking about, but you trust me, which a lot of you do. You're like, you know, you hear me talk about something that you may not have known anything about, but you're like, Jesse's passionate about that, so maybe there's something to it. This is going to be a prime example of that, because Lilith Fair is one of those, if you know, you know, situations. It was a very big cultural moment in the late 90s, but once again, if you weren't there or you didn't have some of these artists on your radar, you don't know what I'm talking about. So just to backtrack a little bit, Lilith Fair was a music festival that was started by Sarah McLachlan, and it is an answer to all of the sort of misogyny that was happening on the festival scene, just in the music industry in general, because Sarah McLachlan was seeing a lot of success in the 90s. Her star was on the rise. She was really like wanting to be able to continue to grow who she was as an artist, but she kept getting told no. So she speaks, you know, when she was reflecting on this Lilith Fair experience, she speaks a lot about how, you know, record executives would say, we can't promote this song because Tracy Chapman's new song is really popular right now. So we can't have two, you know, female artists, or, you know, Natalie Imbruglia's song is really big right now, or whatever, you know, the big artist of the time, Sheryl Crow, whatever, you know, so we can't promote two women on a concert bill. We can't play multiple women in a row in their song, you know, on their radio play. And she just got fed up with it. And so she took matters into her own hands. And it's funny because recently this year, I did an episode about women in country, and this is still happening for them. This is not as much of an issue in other genres, despite there's clearly rampant misogyny and sexism happening, but it's not as big of an issue in country. But this was so prevalent across genre, especially in the late 90s, that she decided that she was going to start her own festival. And so she did. Now, I have a particular sort of affinity for 90s singer-songwriter women. You know, it was very queer-coded. The fashion, you know, the sort of, I feel like our decades always harken back to something different, you know, something in the past, right? So like you can point to the 90s and how it was very like 70s and like 60s and 70s, like Flower Child influenced, right? And how there was a sort of freeing nature to the time, because the 80s was so materialistic and like Fast Times and fast cars and cocaine and mansions and, you know, Dallas Dynasty, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so there was a pushback with like grunge and post grunge and punk, and then that kind of softened into this like soft pop rock late 90s era, where, you know, there were a lot of women with pianos and guitars that were talking about their feelings, and it was accepted and it was making money, you know.
Yeah, you might call it like everybody mellowed out a little. Like you think about the biggest rock band in the 80s is like Kiss, like over the top pyrotechnics, you yeah. know, Gene Simmons's tongue is going to reach out through the screen and touch you. And then it's like, then you like chill out and you come into this grungy like Nirvana, which like they're a huge band, but like they're so much more mellow. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you do start to see that reflected in, you know, the music as well as women's music.
Yeah, which was great because I think that it signaled a shift, right? And it allowed you know, women who were making music to be able to have space. Mm-hmm. And so I was always attracted to that. And I'm talking about a very like women-centric thing, and I have a podcast about women as a man, so I have to acknowledge that as well. And it makes me think, Cam, just because we are both, you know, queer people under the umbrella of queer, you know, people, I think a lot about the cis gay man relationship to the cis gay woman relationship. And I wonder, like, what are your thoughts overall about that? Knowing the history of our community and everything, I think that it's important to just touch on this before we get into the rest of Lilith Fair. But, you know, I'm putting you on the spot here. But, like, what are your thoughts about that relationship?
So it's a textured one. There's a layered history. There's a textured and layered history between, like, cis lesbians, which I would identify as that, and cis gay men, which I think that's me. What you identify mm-hmm. as, right? Right. So that's us, right? And it's complicated, but early in the gay liberation movement, you also had this issue of misogyny coming from gay men towards lesbians. Mm-hmm. And there's some conflict there, right? And it's not, I don't want to overblow and make it like the only thing that was going on between those communities, but it was a real part of it. And you have to wonder, Dan Savage famously, who is, mm-hmm. he's a gay podcaster and writer, says that homophobia is misogyny's nasty little brother.
Yeah.
Because well, you know, your average person, your average homophobic person, maybe they just don't like, you know, the other, the different. Okay, that's very typical in human behavior. But it's also the issue of, you know, there's nothing more than a misogynistic man hates than to see another man taking on a woman's role, you know, dating men, for example, or having feminine interests. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, right? And so then, you know, that sucks. And then this idea that, well, gay men could also sort of experience misogyny as a victim of it, but then also perpetrate it as, you know, misogynists themselves. I mean, it's sort of devastating to hear that, but it's also human nature, and we grow and we get better. And, you know, the famous sort of takeaway is that the L in LGBT is first. It used to be GLBT, but because lesbians were there for gay men during the AIDS crisis, when even doctors and nurses would not go in and give them comfort or give them food or water, you know, in some cases, lesbians came to their aid and said, we will feed you, we will clothe you, we will help you, you know, as you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
So it's a textured history. You could talk about it for hours, probably. Maybe there's a history deep dive we do together someday.
Saucy. I like
that. Oh, I fuck with some history,
I
too,
know you
and
do.
Queer history in particular.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's kind of a bittersweet. It's a set, you know, there's beauty to the fact that there's this conflict there, but then in gay men's darkest hour, lesbians were able to come to their aid. And you have to hope we're better for it now. And as a community, we stick together. And I mean, you see sort of echoes of that, right? You have facets of the queer community that will exhibit transphobia, right? And, you know, it's just tough. It's, you know, it's devastating, but it's sort of human nature to be othered, but then to turn around and other somebody else. And we have to fight it. You know, we have to fight together against it. And we have to hope we do better in the future, but it's a complicated relationship. But I think it's better now, wouldn't you say? Like,
yeah.
I love my gays.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. And I felt comfortable putting Cam on the spot with that question because of who you are and what I've learned about you and your content and what you care about. And also, I wanted to just kind of acknowledge that as I talk about this thing that is like fully about like woman power, right? And I like to just say that I'm like an almost a participant observer, an admirer, you know, someone who just like women. And the reason I have this podcast is because like seeing women be liberated was liberating to me, because the way that like straight cis men feel liberated, at least growing up, it's changing now, but the way that they felt liberated and the way that they were portrayed to be liberated never resonated with me. It was never like being like liberation for straight cis men was always like about power over mm-hmm. others, not power in themselves, right? It was about not having to hold themselves accountable and doing whatever the hell they wanted to do. And so like, to see women, especially like knowing that something like Lilith Fair exists, was about taking power back and was about being able to change a narrative about, are women marketable, you know, just women without a tie to a man, right? And not women as purely sex. Sex can be a part of it, but not just women as sexual objects, right? So like, being able to be an adult and think a lot more deeply about Lilith Fair and what it meant is like, just makes me even more attracted to it. And from a purely like superficial standpoint, like I love the aesthetic, like the thought of women, like feeling like if they want to shave their heads, they shave their heads. Great. They want to grow out their armpit hair. Great. They want to just like make out with each other in public. Great. Which we're going to talk a little bit about someone's account of Lilith Fair shortly. But yeah, that is just something that has always been super attractive to me. Now, I want to ask you, because I know you didn't really like know much about Lilith Fair before I approached you about this. Had you heard of it? What was your perception?
Yeah, I absolutely had heard of it. I did not know the history behind it, though, and how, you know, I have my own internalized misogyny that I just have to be constantly like unpacking and working okay. through. And it's still like, you know, when I hear like, oh no, this was like made by women for women, the brainchild of women, driven by women, produced by women, I'm always like, oh my God, like their boyfriends didn't help them with like a little bit, right? And that's awful. That's awful to hear like a woman, a feminist say that. But it's just, you know, I get, it reminds me, like I've done some deep dives on Fifth Harmony, right? Mm-hmm. And Camila Cabello in particular. And she like writes all this incredible music and they never would let her use it for Fifth Harmony. But then when she started to come out on her album, it's like Camila, she has her ups and downs, right? But like, she's one of my problematic faves, you might say.
Yeah.
And she's like this incredible writer, but I was so shocked to learn that just because, you know, we get told like, well, these women, you're pop stars. They're sort of these props of men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at, it's like, you could talk about like Britney Spears and Willem, like Max Martin's really the guy behind all the music. Or you can talk about, you know, how Kanye sort of put Kim on a level of fashion that she wasn't quite at before. And she was sort of his muse and he was dressing her. And I don't know, it still sort of seeps through to this day to me where it's like, no, like this, the women did it. And it's like, of course they did. Of course they did. Sarah McLachlan, you know, Paula Cole, all these incredible artists, like, of course they did this. But I don't know, you know, to learn the roots of it and that it was Sarah McLachlan, her love child, her project, you know, it was eye-opening for me. And it always is. And it's just, I think, I you know, I hope, you know, people listening are sort of hearing me when I say it. It's just like, it's a constant fucking struggle to unpack internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just going to be doing it for the rest of my life because like, especially I grew up in the Deep South in a very traditional area. And
because what state, you know, are you from again, if you don't mind sharing?
I'm from Alabama.
Yeah.
So
I'm from Arkansas. Yeah, like, so.
Right. Mm-hmm. You get it then.
Yep.
And it's just to unpack that and to even have like men in my lives who are great and I would consider to be feminist, but still like just ever so slightly, you know, those misogynistic ideas of like, all women are a little crazy. You know, you're just constantly always having to unpack it. So, but this was sort of healing in that way. Learning about this fabulous festival was healing, I would say.
Yeah. And really great for me too, because I knew a little bit about it and I had this fascination with it, but I'd never really dug deep. So to get into the history, yes, Sarah McLachlan kind of just decided that she was fed up with this industry and how it operated for women. And so she sought out investors herself. And, you know, Lollapalooza, I think, was starting to flounder in the late 90s. Some of the popular festivals that are like massive right now have been around for a really long time. And they have ebbs and flows, right? Coachella is not what it used to be like. And so I think that that was like the main, Lala was like her main sort of like framework in competition here. And so she was like, I have an answer to this and I'm going to prove that Lilith Fair can, or a festival with only women artists can do really well. And so we had people like, I'm not going to list everybody because it wound up growing over the few years that it was a thing, but she had people like Sheryl Crow, Jewel, Indigo Girls, Lisa Loeb, Fiona Apple, Sean Colvin, Tracy Chapman, Natalie Merchant, Emmylou Harris, Paula Cole. I mean, these are hard hitters of the time and some of them even for a really long time. And they built something that was incredibly successful. So there was a quote from an interview that she did as a sort of retrospective. And she said, like, I'd walk in and do an interview and they said, well, we'd love to add this song, but we can't add you this week because we had a Tori Amos or because we added Tracy Chapman, like I mentioned before. And so she said it was really frustrating. And so she did it really to like prove everybody wrong. It launched in 1997 and she created the top grossing music festival of the late 90s. And it was over 3 years and it racked up over 60 million in ticket sales. So after the first year, seeing all the success, it grew. And she was able to expand the type of artists and everything that are there, which I'll talk about in just a moment because of, there was some criticism, which allowed it to be able to evolve. But I want to know, aside from your relationship to the festival as a whole, some of these artists that were on the bill, like, did you listen to any of these artists? Are you a fan of any of them? Are there any standouts for you?
Yeah, I would absolutely say I was quite into Jewel.
Yeah.
I really liked her. You Were Meant for Me is one of the first songs I learned to play on guitar.
Oh, yeah.
She, you know, I'm a big fan of hers. Can I just say, I'm shocked at a few artists that weren't involved.
Okay.
Was shocked that like Alanis Morissette was not a part of this, who was very into and fully kind of expect, oh, she's on this lineup, right? And I like was control finding Alanis, like just to make sure. So like I definitely, certainly I would say she was contemporaries with your like Sarah McLachlan's, your Jules and stuff. So like some artists that I would think would fit in really great, I'm a big fan of, but just didn't happen to be on the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say of all the names mentioned, Sarah McLachlan, obviously know her, know some of her big songs. And I think Jewel would probably have been my like favorite standout of the lineup.
Yeah. I saw Jewel a couple of years ago, my boyfriend and I, because I'm in this like whole phase of healing my inner child and going to concerts that I never got to go to when I was younger.
Love that.
So since then, you know, since becoming an adult, I've seen Alanis, I've seen Jewel, I've seen Sheryl Crow. And it's been really incredible to see them, you know, at this stage of their careers, like still out there and like doing the damn thing. But yeah, I love that. I was a fan of so many of these people, and like the fact that I was too young to be able to experience this just like hurts me, because if I could time travel to a moment in like pop culture history, I would go to Lilith Fair.
Yeah, that was a takeaway for me as well. Like, I'm devastated that I was too young to go, right? I would have been like 5 or 6 or 8 maybe when it was happening. So like, and you know, I know they tried to bring it back in 2010 and it failed, which I now feel personally responsible for. I would have been in like college, but
I didn't even hear about it.
I think now's the time. I think maybe we're going to talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there as well. Like, I second that. I would love to go to Lilith Fair in the 90s.
Yes.
What a time.
So it's obviously this massive success, and it creates a shift in the pop culture landscape, right? But there are some clear criticisms. I mean, just looking at the first year's lineup, it's very clear that it is white. It is just all white women, right? And it also, like, people criticized it for just being like quote mom music. I think that criticism is stupid, because you know, it's essentially saying that there's like something wrong with something that would be appealing to like women who are in their like late 30s or mid to late 30s or something like that, you know, and have children. Like, whatever, that's stupid. But like the lack of racial diversity and the lineup is definitely like a big deal. But what was really cool is that Sarah took that criticism and she worked to expand the lineup for the second and third year to include different types of artists. And so, you know, I think that hearing when someone takes criticism and they, actually like listen to it and they don't get defensive and they make a change, I love that. And so, you know, she worked with organizers to add people like Erykah Badu, Dallas native Erykah Badu, I live in Dallas, Queen Latifah, and then she brought on, and this is something wild, I did not know this, she brought up the up and coming Missy Elliott. And her debut live performance at Lilith Fair was in like a big trash bag, basically, which is so like Missy Elliott. It wasn't an actual trash bag, but it like looked like a trash bag, which is something that she would wear in music videos and other performances and everything. But like for her to be like an up and coming artist at Lilith Fair in the late 90s is just hilarious to me. And so, you know, basically there was this kind of piece about an oral history of Lilith Fair. And it was saying that all of that second year, I think, is really significant because those were artists who were changing things in different worlds than the world that McLachlan occupies. So that part is really cool to think about, because the whole point of this was to create change and to, you know, shift some things I keep saying. And without that, like, intersectionality and realizing that, like, oh, there's more than one way to shift and there's more than one sort of like arena that needs to be shifted here, and bringing in those other people and those other voices, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, very much so. And I also think it just goes to show, it's like a little microcosm for like the importance of intersectional feminism, right? Yeah. It can't just be cishet white women, you know, in the conversation. And I think Lilith Fair, you know, they course corrected, which is great. And, you know, then you start to get kind of a more full picture of, you know, representing women in the music industry, right? You have, you know, sort of, you know, classic singer-songwriter vibes with like Tracy Chapman, but then you bring in like the hip hop factor with like Queen Latifah and Missy Elliott. That's fucking great, right? So it's nice to see. Obviously disappointing, not shocking that first year was a bit exclusive. But it's nice to see there was at least some course correction.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the 2010 revival a little bit ago. Lilith Fair lasts 3 years. And it's funny because you and I on your show recently talked about Mel B and Jerry Halliwell, the Spice Girls, and their relationship. And Lilith Fair was about 3 years, just like the Spice Girls. It was this sort of like meteoric, huge thing. And then it just like disappeared, you know? So funny parallel there, but, and that's a plug for your show too, but, it lasted just a few years and then it went away. And, you know, in interviews that Sarah had done, she just talked about the fact that she recorded 2 albums in 3 years. She had a child, she was touring and doing all this stuff. And like, it just became too much because like we see with women, a lot of times everything is falling on her to be successful. And it's like, why should someone have to do it all? You know, there's this like back and forth of like, women should be able to do it all if they want to, but also why should they always have to do it all? And you know what I mean? And so I think there was like a little bit of back and forth there and it just became too much for her. So, you know, we fast forward a decade later and she tries to revive it in 2010, and the music landscape has fully changed. I mean, how were you consuming music in 2010? We were in college, right?
Right. And it's, you know, we've moved to iPods and Apple Music. And like, yes, of course, we have our divas. But like, when I think of 2010, I just think of like dubstep and, you know, fucking electronic, right? And like fucking LMFAO and the Chainsmokers and
Kesha. Man,
Kesha, which like, love her. Shout out to Kesha. Come on the pod. But like, it was a different landscape for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, she admitted that it was like dumb that she took the same approach. She got really big names to be in the 2010 revival, but then a bunch of them wound up backing out because it was like poorly organized and it did not have the same magic as the first go round, and it wound up being canceled after just a few shows.
Honestly, was devastated to read that. I mean, Kelly Clarkson was so big and she seemed to be like the headliner, but there was all sorts of types and people from the original tour coming back. And I mean, a lot of the artists, they started the tour and then feared they weren't going to be paid. And maybe that's due to like disorganization, ticket sales are down, whatever. Yeah. And they dropped out mid tour and then you just don't have a tour anymore.
Yeah. So womp womp, that's kind of like the end of, you know, the Lilith Fair experience, not the legacy though. And I want to talk about why it's named Lilith Fair. And I know that you discovered some really cool stuff and I'd love to hear what you found out about just using Lilith as a symbol.
Absolutely. So I have done a podcast episode. Obviously, we talk about pop culture and music a lot, but like sometimes I just want to talk about lesbian vampires, right? So I have an episode called The Daughters of Lilith, and then it's like
my nipples are hard. Oh my
lesbian
God.
Vampires yeah, or I something. And we covered, you know, the very lesbian history of some vampiric characters. And so, of course, to me, Lilith is not only the first vampire, but she's also the first witch and succubus. And I won't go on and on about that, but Lilith is the mother of all demons, right? Mm-hmm. She's a mythological figure, and she was, you know, according to some folklore, Adam's first wife. Now, she's been around longer than like Christian, Judeo-Christian scripture. She was in the Epic of Gilgamesh and mentioned in the Dead Sea Scrolls even more.
Which is
wild. But the sort of Jewish understanding of Lilith, which is kind of how I understand it, that's like the first story I heard about her, is that Lilith and Adam were sort of created by God in a kind of an equal way, a born of the same dust. And since they were created equally, Lilith said, "We're going to be treated equally." And she sort of demanded that of Adam. And in particular, he wanted to be on top during sex, but Lilith wanted to be on top during sex. That was, you know, their big conflict. And so she deuces out. She leaves the Garden of Eden to gain independence. She meets up with Samuel, who is an angel that God cast out of heaven for planting the tree of knowledge. They start having babies. God sent some angels after Lilith. They found her in a cave having babies. The angels told her they'd kill 100 of her children a day, every day, as punishment for her obedience, her disobedience. And in revenge, Lilith, you know, she's still exacting her revenge to this day. She goes after humans' children. So Lilith is who got blamed for things like stillborn infants or SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. And she also is blamed for the fault. She's found at fault for men's night emissions and erotic dreams. And
not mine.
Supposedly, yeah. Well, supposedly masturbating and erotic dreams impregnate Lilith, which of course will create more demons. So you shouldn't do any of those things.
Oh, God.
And I just have the note here. To me, like, Lilith is obviously a lesbian, right? Very lesbian, COVID queen. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So using her as the symbol of the fair, it is this, I will not be subservient. I want to be on top. Play my song on the radio. You know, like Sarah McLachlan walking in that radio station. I don't care. I don't care that Natalie Imbruglia is, you know, Torn is all over the charts. You're going to put my song on. And so Lilith, of course, in my opinion, you know, is the perfect mascot for this fair. This, I refuse to be obedience. I will not bow down. I can be on top, right?
I love
and
that.
I'll go to my own space. I'll leave your fucking Garden of Eden and I'm going to go to my own space and I'll be, you know, the ruler of my own land, which is what Lilith Fair was for women.
Incredible. See, this is just like affirming that I'm like a Kinsey 4.5. You know what I mean? but no, I love that. And I love using symbolism like that to make a current statement, you know? And I think that just like speaks to how intelligent that Sarah is and that we see artists and we like think about them as, you know, they make music. This is their thing. But so many of them create great music because they're brilliant people. Right. And so I love hearing that story. And, you know, I think my most like recent frame of reference for Lilith, because I knew a little bit of that, but not like. Not in depth at all. I definitely learned whenever you brought this up, I learned a lot about Lilith. But my most recent frame of reference was in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Did you watch
yes.
that?
Yes. Oh, sure. And that she's great, right? The Lilith character in that show. I mean, she's kind of everything you'd expect and want her to be. Fucking great. Especially, I mean, the first two seasons, I feel like it goes off the rails a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
But the first two seasons of that show were like top tier TV for me, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I was enamored because I love the like dark exploration of Sabrina as opposed to the, I loved the sitcom growing up too, but I loved the dark exploration. And so it was really cool to see all of the demons and hell and everything. And I'm like, yeah. And just like putting my church trauma aside to enjoy it, you know, it's a good time.
Right. And then you have, you know, Lilith, they call her Madame Satan. She's a teacher in Sabrina's school, but she's really like, you know, she's this demoness and her struggles that she goes through, like with all the different male characters and the Satan character in the show. I think it's, she sort of comes off as this very powerful character, this sort of, you know, this sort of nefarious party and this powerful character that's gonna, you know, mess things up for Sabrina a little bit. But then you start to see like, well, she's a victim of the system too. So Lilith is kind of misunderstood, right? Because she gets cast as like, well, she's killing all these babies, but why is she doing it? Because God started killing all of her babies that she was just having off in peace, you know, on her own. So you know, yeah, there's two sides to every story, I guess you could say, but like, you know, it's just a woman standing up for her children. Of course she gets cast as this horrible mother of all demons, right?
Of course. So in the festival, of course, because this is just like a magnet for queer people and queer coded things. Of course, even if they were not out or not, there were queer artists that were playing at Lilith Fair. And I know that you took a look into this. And so who were some of the, whether they were out or not at the time or where they were in their journey, who were some of the queer or gay or bi or whatever women who were playing it?
Yeah, so we have a little queer artist spotlight. And the first I want to mention is one of the people who sort of helped come up with the tour, which was Paula Cole, because she and Sarah McLachlan had kind of turned things on its head before Lilith Fair even happened. She toured with Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
And the record labels or whoever, the tour managers, the people, the man told them, you can't have two women like headlining a tour. You can't have a woman opening for another woman. Nobody cares, right? And you've got to have a man there to like – keep the girls' boyfriends happy, I guess, or whatever. But they said, no, we're not going to do it. And they did a very successful tour together. Now, Paula Cole, the name might not ring any bells immediately if you're not like a big 90s head, but you, of course, know the song I Don't Want to Wait, which was the theme song for like every teen drama show, but in particular, One Tree Hill, which, by the way, if you've been like interested in the Sophia Bush is a lesbian now and like dating a female soccer player and broke up her marriage, I have an episode on that if anybody's into that. But
mess. Absolute yeah. mess.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's an absolute mess. The episode is called Sophia Bush is Queer, But at What Cost? Because she's a homewrecker. And then also you guys definitely know the song Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? Now, Paula Cole is openly bisexual. She's married to a man, but of course, bisexuality features attraction to men, so that does not take away from her queerness at all. But a fun fact about her is the song Where Have All the Cowboys Gone was actually horribly misunderstood by some of the public. So she wrote this song, which contains the lyrics, quote, I will do the laundry if you pay all the bills. Where is my John Wayne? Where is my prairie song? Where is my happy ending? Where have all the cowboys gone? And obviously, you know this song, right? Like, it's tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. It's ironic, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people got it. Feminists got it. Paula Cole talked about how like Europeans got the joke. Apparently people in Spain really liked the song. It was popular there. And it has this mention of like a shiny gun, which is supposed to be like a phallic reference, right? She's poking fun at men and their obsession with like their penises and, mm-hmm. and their arms that they bear in America. But conservatives in America like took the song as literal and they loved it. So for example, Rush Limbaugh, who was like the Tucker Carlson of the 2000s, for younger listeners mm-hmm. who don't know who that piece of shit is,
yep.
He would play it on his like shitty little conservative talk show and like sing along to it. And because they were like, yeah, where have men are too weak now. Men are too soft. Everybody's like gay and, you know, lavender now.
Thank
and
God.
Where have all the cowboys gone?
Yeah.
So that's a fun little.
I love when it goes over their heads. Like,
yeah.
And it just got her more success.
Yeah.
And I cannot move on from Paula Cole without talking about something really quickly. Her song Feelin' Love is like Britney Spears' favorite song. In the Stages documentary, Britney is like sitting at the chair getting her hair done or whatever. And she's like, oh my God, this is my favorite song. And she turns it up and it's Paula Cole's Feelin' Love. Look up the lyrics. They are real raunchy, which I love. And so you could tell that Britney like loved it, but she was still like a quote good girl at that time. And so she was kind of like, but definitely like fucking. And so, fun little snippet about Paula Cole that I can't not think about because all roads lead to Britney for me. So
as they should, all roads lead to Taylor for me. So I get you 100%. Mm-hmm. Another queer artist, a duo that we'd have to mention, we were talking about like a little queer artist spotlight is the Indigo Girls. So the Indigo song you probably know is Closer to Fire, which was used 3 times this past summer in the Barbie movie. It is a favorite of Greta Gerwig's. So you've definitely heard that song. And they are comprised of Amy Ray and Emily Saylors. They both identify as lesbians. And to me, like when you hear Indigo Girls, you just immediately are like lesbian, right? Like
absolutely.
In your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're sort of always like brought up as like, I think usually like a good natured, but like if people are like, oh, fucking lesbians, you know, oh, we got the Indigo Girls over here. You know what? Like you can just sort of like associate them with like lesbianism. Tig Notaro, who is another, you know, queer female comic, does this great like closing set on one of her jokes, her closer, where it's like she spends 10 minutes talking to the audience and just being like, and everybody welcome the Indigo Girls. And then she's like, the Indigo Girls aren't here. That would be crazy. It'd be great if they were here. Well, everybody, guess what? Please welcome the Indigo. And it goes on for like 10 minutes. And then, you know, you have to find the set and watch it. I won't say what happens at the end.
But okay.
Like,
okay.
They're sort of like very much interwoven into like lesbian cultural footprint, right? Even though, like, you know, your average person might have not heard of them, but really you have. You've heard a joke about them, or you've heard Closer to Fire, like, mm-hmm. you know, you've heard that played somewhere. And they have like really easy listening music for sure.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary about the Lilith Fair in preparation for this episode. And apparently the Indigo Girls are the ones who like showed up and were like, all right, girls, get out of your dressing rooms. Cause like apparently everybody, you would think it'd be like girl power. Yes. Let's hang out. Let's jam. But everybody was like shy at the beginning because like, of course they are. It's like all these like timid little songstresses that are like kind of shy and, you know, they don't want to bother each other. But the Indigo Girls were like, all right, girls, like Cheryl, get your guitar. Cheryl, bring your accordion. We're going to cover songs together. We're going to learn each other's music. So that's the Indigo Girls.
Oh, I love that. I did not know that snippet. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They were the ones like, they're like the dyke camp counselors. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, all right, come on everybody. We're going to play softball, you know, and you got to love it for them.
Yeah. Khaki shorts. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yes, very much so. And like a nice loose flannel. Yes. And then of course we have mentioned her name a couple times, but we'd have to talk about Tracy Chapman. Now, songs of hers, you know, would definitely be Fast Car, which was recently covered by Luke Combs, and they mm-hmm. performed it together at the Grammys. And you definitely know the song Give Me One Reason. You've definitely heard that on the radio, and you probably saw the performance at the Grammys. It was lovely. And Luke, to his credit, because did you hear about this, like him covering her song and it getting so big and all of that? Like,
yes.
I do have to say, hearing about like a cishet white man covering like a black queer woman's song, we all go like, yeah. We're all like, oh, is this okay or not? But it does seem like it was okay. Like, they seem to have a very good back and forth.
Yeah.
And he was very careful to say in his comments about the Grammys, like he made a post about, he was like, tonight was wild. And he was like, Tracy, thank you for allowing me to be part of your night. And I do think there are instances where like people who have all this privilege and positions of power over other groups of people, like, can interact and collaborate in a way that is like helpful
and respectful
and spreads their message more and elevates them and brings them to new heights, you know? And so like, there's my first instinct to all of that was like, oh, well, of course everybody's like, oh, fucking white man did it. Like everybody's, you know, but like, it does seem like it was a good moment for both of them. And
yeah.
Right. But that's where Tracy's kind of been in the news lately. And she has never officially made a public statement on her sexuality, but she has lived openly as a queer woman. She also dated Alice Walker, who is the woman who wrote The Color Purple.
Yeah.
And this brings up a good point about like how I rant and rave on my podcast about how like sometimes it's really annoying that like straight people need like a very special Glee episode where Kurt comes out to like yeah. really believe someone's queer instead of just like, no, that's a queer person existing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, I think Tracy Chapman is a good example of like, she has kind of made a point, I think, not to make an official statement on it, but she has like lived openly as a queer woman for years. So,
yeah. And yeah. I mean, I think I fall prey to that as well too. Cause I'm like, just say it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I find myself like, thinking that people owe us something because of their platform and how it could help people. Mm-hmm. But also like they're also humans and they don't have to do that for us, you know? So I don't know. I get why it's easy to like fall into that trope, but also people are just people. And like, if they just want to exist how they are,
yeah. And it's, you know, it's like, well, if you're going to publicly date women, you are out. And it's just, I think it's just a good example of, yeah. you know, Miley talked about, I dated women and I did not hide it, but nobody cared,
yeah.
you know, and the Paps, like they didn't picture it, like nobody cared. Right. So mm-hmm. I think there's all sorts of interesting, you know, instances where queer people's stories are a little bit erased because people are expecting the big teary, like, you know, Glee special episode. And sometimes that's needed and sometimes that's appropriate, but sometimes, it, like in cases of Tracy Chapman's, it's just not. And I think that's beautiful as well. And I think the big come out episode can be beautiful and can be a fabulous expression as well. But I just think I feel like as a society, we need to sort of understand that like queerness exists in many different like forms and it can be communicated in lots of different ways and like leaving space for that. Maybe is how I would put it. But and then we've got to, of course, as far as queer artists go, we've got to give an honorable mention to Jewel because she dropped the F slur 6 times in her song Pieces of You. So like she's claiming some kind of part of the community at that point. So Jewel, shout out to you. Come on the pod and explain that choice to us, maybe.
Truly, because Jewel, while I love her, she says some questionable things sometimes. But that just like shows the complexity of human nature. We'll say that.
Yeah.
We're going to let her have a pass.
Yeah, I guess we have to. But like, and I feel like I have to, I guess, since I talked about how much I loved her. But I will say, I read an interview of hers in preparation for this episode. And I was like, Jewel, wait a minute. I don't know about what you're saying here. And you used the F slur how many times in a song? Although I will say it's a good song. Like it makes some points. Pieces of You makes some good fucking points. You know. Whatever. Ally Queen Jewel dropped the F slur 6 times. Honorable mention goes out to her.
She played it when I saw her too, and she did it.
How did you feel? Did you feel attacked? Did you feel seen? What was the mix of emotions there?
Well, the song is, it's like kind of to be shocking, you know? And so I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like I would let Jewel call me a fag, you know?
But
I think like you have to be very careful. You have to be very careful, but also sometimes I'm like, there's bigger battles to fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about like people who say dyke. It, I mean, like if you're obviously not like a hateful individual, and I mean, Jewel's making like an artistic point, right? She's talking about how like, and I actually think it's one of the best points of all time, which is the people who really, really, really fucking hate someone, it's because they see something they hate about themselves in that person. That is, that is one of the truest things I've ever encountered in life.
Yep.
But I was just like, oh, wow, Jewel. Because I was kind of searching like, well, who's sexuality? And I was like, Jewel is sexuality. And it was like, wow, Jewel, you said the F slur. So
yeah, right.
Fun stuff to learn.
Yeah. Or people hate you not because they see something within themselves that they hate, but they see something that they wish that they could do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's these identifying ContraPoints actually has this incredible episode about shame and like why people do the things they do online. And you know, ContraPoints as a trans woman, she highlights some trans creators who have made their bread and butter hating on other trans people. And it's sort of like, well, what's really going on here, right? You know, so just incredible, incredible YouTube video essay if anybody has like 3 hours to spare. But
love it.
I mean, Jewel was making points, but then again, she was
but also
throwing around some words.
Another queer artist too, just to quickly close this out, Queen Latifah. Just to quickly mention her because she didn't make any sort of statement until the 2021 BET Awards, and she introduced her partner and their child. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, shout out to Queen Latifah. Incredible.
So I want to quickly, since we're just talking about so many problematic people, I want to quickly just share a snippet from something that Lena Dunham wrote for Glamour about Lilith Fair, because I think it's hilarious. Lena Dunham, I mean, obviously there's a lot to unpack there, but I do like this. I love this moment. This was back in 2017 before we knew everything that we know now. So Lena Dunham was a young girl and talking about how she had tickets to go to Lilith Fair and she was like bragging to her friends or something like that. And they were like, no, you don't. And her kids at school, because she said she didn't have any friends, I guess. And so she went home and she told her mom, and her mom was like, you shouldn't lie. She's like, but you know, let's see if we can make this experience happen. And so her mom secured some tickets it was sold out, but she like got legit tickets from scalpers. And she got two extra tickets, but Lena didn't have any friends to invite. So they like took her like little sister and like mom's assistant or something like that. And so basically like in this snippet that was written for Glamour, recounts the experience, and it is just it's incredible. So quote, I'm just gonna read this snippet. Quote, we wandered the parking lot where I took stock of all the shaved heads, tattoos, and armpit hair. Oh, the armpit hair. At this amphitheater, I was witnessing as many ways of being a woman as there are women. When the music started, as I remember, with Paula Cole taking the stage in a flurry of goddess force, I stared more at the concertgoers than the acts themselves. Everyone was spinning, arms wide toward the heavens, aka the smoggy sky of industrial New England, and laughing with abandon, enlivened by the beauty and safety of the collective we became. Women pranced, stretched, bowed, rolled in the grass, ate churros, kissed with tongue. My younger sibling, Grace, danced in tiny overalls and would later tell me it was a pivotal moment in their understanding of themselves as gender fluid. Helen was in her early 30s, this was the assistant, impossibly cool and tan on our gingham blanket, nodding along. My mother realized how amazing it felt not to watch hawk-eyed over her children the way she had been trained to do in male-heavy environments.
Hmm. Gotta love it. Maybe that's is Lilith Fair the reason Lena Dunham is the way she is, right? Is maybe the question.
I hope not. Because I really like a positive memory of Lilith Fair, but anyway. So with that, Cam and I have picked a few contemporary artists that if we were to revive Lilith Fair, we would put on the ticket. And I think, what is it? I told you to pick five, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's my show, so I picked a little bit more than that. But
that's fine. Because I have like some I'm going to add in.
Okay. So let's just kind of like go through these quickly. We can give them all individual attention, but just like who's your first pick?
I mean, obviously, I'm starting off strong, headlining Olivia Rodrigo. I feel like she is the moment. I feel like she's giving out Plan B at her concerts. Olivia Rodrigo, she's not perfect, but I'm always pulling for her. I really like her. And I think she is the energy of Lilith Fair reincarnated. I think she's a big part of the reason I think we're ready. Like, whoever makes Lilith Fair, Sarah McLachlan, I'm sure you're listening to this podcast. We're ready for a new one. Olivia Rodrigo, for sure.
Yes. And I didn't look at your list because I didn't, in case we have any crossover, if we don't, just to make it interesting. And so I didn't have Olivia on mine, but that is a great pick. But someone kind of related in the Olivia universe, I picked Chapel Roan. Mm. They work with the same like writer producer. Do you know Chapel's music?
Yeah. She's opening for Olivia on tour right mm-hmm. now, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
My friend told me about her a couple of years ago and I was just like instantly enamored. She's like very campy, kind of like looks like she's dressed for the cabaret, but like very unapologetically queer. I think she identifies as bisexual. Don't, if that's wrong, I'm sorry. But, she is just like, the music that she creates is really just like poignant and, I don't know. I think that her unapologetic like sex, but not like it's sex in a different way than I think we get sex a lot of times. And just her sort of campy personality would be great for this because she's very pop, but a little bit different singer songwriter pop.
Yeah, I agree. And I, to be honest, I don't know a ton of her. My first instinct was to put her, because I've just heard all the buzz from like the younger mm-hmm. gay women about her.
Yeah.
And like, so I was like, oh, I should put her on there. But I was like, every clip I hear on TikTok I like, and I will have a phase. I will get into her when it's time.
You should.
But then I was like, you listen to Olivia. Like, you know Olivia. Just put her on there. That's more like realistic to me. So, yeah. My number two is going to be kind of a throwback, Ellie Goulding. Specifically, though, she's doing just the Lights album in this iteration. Ooh. I like her older music, but like to me, the Lights album encapsulates this female singer-songwriter, unapologetic, just sort of beat of her own drum vibe. I love Ellie.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Fletcher is next for me, which feels a little like on the nose, but I mean, she is like – the moment, you know, she is like a big queer woman artist right now, and she's talking about eating pussy, you know, and I love that. And she's got that pop star quality. And she has a line in her song Doing Better that came out this year, and it said, I went and saw a psychic, went on a pussy diet. And I just loved that. So I think that deserves a spot in Lilith Fair.
Would love that. And for any what I will say, listeners, I swear to God, I am going to do a Fletcher deep dive soon. It's coming. It just...
I did look and notice that that was missing. And I was like, ooh, that's probably something that you get a lot of.
Yes. Getting tons of requests for that currently and always. And it will happen. I swear to fucking God it will.
I will be sat and ready for that.
Yeah. So my next pick is going to be my just obsessed with this idea, Megan Thee Stallion. For those of you who don't know, Megan is on a mission right now. So we got her song Cobra, talks about like her most recent depression, but then the song Hiss came out, right? She disses everybody who's ever kind of done her wrong, famously, of course, Nicki Minaj. And that sparked a little beef, but you know, we'll see how that develops. But Meg is right now, she's putting out this next album without the help of like a label, because her label fucked her over. She's very much like the snake imagery to me. It might not be Taylor inspired at all. I don't want to like credit Taylor with that, but like we very much have a reputation reckoning era coming for Megan, and I'm obsessed with her. And I, to me, Lilith Fair, it's not going to be complete without Megan.
Iconic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She is a force to be reckoned with. And like, she's a person that you can't take your eyes off of.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that there's anyone I like more than her in music right now, frankly.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick for my next one, Biba Doobie. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm. Not familiar. Tell me more.
So Biba Doobie kind of like came up on TikTok, but she is a Filipino like rock artist, and she does like very 90s inspired music. She has like a kind of softer, like almost like one note voice, but not boring to me. And she goes from like sort of twinkly, almost lullaby type songs sometimes on her albums to these like big exploding like rock inspired, very like post grunge era 90s music, which is like such a sweet spot for me. And I love her music, and I've seen her live and just really enjoyed it. And she opened for Taylor, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
yeah,
did she?
On some dates. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
During the Asian tour?
No, she is, I think she's Filipino British, maybe.
Okay.
I am pretty sure she opened for Taylor. Let me double check myself, because I'm feeling stupid.
Well, she's had like 1,000 different openers on that tour. So yeah. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yes. She was on the Eras tour. I don't know what leg very she was cool. on. I know she did American dates. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, yeah, love that. Love it. Love a Taylor protege, perhaps. My next pick is going to be Kim Petras.
Okay.
Just this sort of like fucking, I want some slutty fucking unapologetic pop to like shake my damn ass to. I'm not saying we don't need to have like that acoustic piano in the arms of an angel vibe come through this festival some as well, but like I do feel like there needs to be like a ravish kind of like unapologetically slutty night, and to me Kim Petras is gonna bring that through.
Yeah. Does Kim Petras have like, and just in your experience, I'm not gonna make you speak for all lesbians, but does Kim Petras like have a good lesbian fan base? Because I know the gay men like are obsessed.
You know, I don't know. I don't think so. But like, I'm sometimes curious. I do approach my pop like a gay man. I do spend a lot of time in Pophead Circle Jerk on Reddit.
Love that.
So like, it just, I'm not surprised that I might be falling in with like gay men in this category.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's some lesbians, but I feel like, you know, maybe not the biggest fan base going on for her, but I'm part of it. So
fucking incredible. My next pick is Amber Mark. Okay. So Amber Mark is an R&B artist right now. She's a really unique kind of deeper voice, which I absolutely love. And her music is a little bit experimental sometimes. It is I don't know. It's just the richness of her tones and the way that she writes music and how she kind of ebbs and flows. She's very much R&B and alt R&B, but she gets into a little bit of other territories. And she has an incredible album she released in 2022. Amber Mark is her name. So I would absolutely put her on here because I just want her to bring her brand of R&B to this.
Hmm. Love that. Love that energy. My next pick is going to be an artist that goes by the name Blue Eyes.
Okay.
And you've probably seen this girl on TikTok. The first time I ever found her, she makes her own music, right? And she was like, what if I made a song that sounded like a cross between a 1975 song and a Taylor Swift song? And she wrote this song called You'd Never Know. And it is about like her struggling through this sort of mystery illness, which I kind of had this similar experience with.
Okay.
And it is such a good fucking song. And she's just like classic singer-songwriter. She has like a couple EPs out. And it's very much, it's like that, it's like 80s soft pop, like 80s synth alt pop kind of vibes. And the singer-songwriter vibes, I feel like she writes these really personal songs. And I just, particularly my millennial women listening, and like your Gen Z cusp, anyone listening will like it. But I just, you're going to hear those lyrics and be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, me too, girl. Like the thing she's talking about, the friendship breakups and the different, like she goes through these breakups and friendship breakups. And I'm just like, oh, you are being far too relatable for someone who doesn't know me and my personal story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
get out of my freaking mind and my face. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I need her in this Lilith Fair for sure.
Love that. My next pick is Willow. I am obsessed with Willow's music. The way that like she interprets like punk and pop music is just so fresh. It feels really fresh, but also harkens back to the genre in a way that feels like it's paying the respects to it, but also bringing it into a new generation. And like the way she screams and her voice, just like fucking incredible. And I know you like Camila, and mm-hmm. Willow and Camila have a song, yeah. Psycho Freak. And I love that song too.
Yeah. I feel like off that album of Camila's, it was really the only standout.
Yes. It was a standout.
Although, thank God we're getting new Camila episode, or not episodes. We're getting a new Camila album, so I'm excited about that.
Hyper pop Camila.
I know, it's like she's doing this Charlie XCX thing. Like, yeah. I'm into it for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that's my five. Although, can I throw out some special guests?
I have two. A few. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Special guest number one. Now, this is not going to be an every night thing, but I do need. And this kind of plays into a larger conspiracy and like personal need that I have.
Okay.
I do need at some point in my life, Sabrina Carpenter and Olivia Rodrigo to make up and then write songs about the boys who did them wrong together. And
yes.
just say, really, it's not your fault. It's not her fault. It's his fault.
Yes.
And although like teaming up on Joshua Bassett, who seems to be going through like different mental health crises at different times. I don't know, like, you know, but the vibe of that is something I need in my life. Of course, like Sabrina becoming like one of Taylor's new little girlies, that might not bode well if you believe, which I very much do and have an episode on about the potential Taylor and Olivia feud.
Yes.
Which I would bet my fucking life is true. I've heard all sorts of behind the scenes tea as well.
That yes.
just seems to really support it.
Great episode, because I also very much buy into that. So I was, I was in that one for sure.
Yeah. 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 But I, regardless of all that, I need Olivia and Sabrina to make up and have a song that they do together. And some nights, Sabrina comes up on stage. She makes an appearance. She does a song or two, and then she and Olivia, like, do her song, and then she's out, right?
Yeah, and then they kiss.
Yeah, maybe it's just, like, a little bit.
Like, a little, like, soft kiss, because
– yeah, just a gentle.
I love that idea. Yeah. Mike, I told you, this is, like, tipping my Kinsey scale. Okay, Maggie Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh, yes.
She just so perfectly fits the bill here.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her live when she was touring with her first full album. And what a fucking artist.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, her song Light On, life-changing. Alaska, life-changing. She's incredible. Her cover of Tim McGraw ate Taylor Swift up. Like, hate to say it, but she did.
True. She did.
Maggie's a special one for sure. And would, you're right, the singer songwriter, the confessional, the mellow, muted, but still really like intense lyrically. Yes, she belongs there.
Yep, she is just an enigma for me.
For sure.
And then I also have, this is a little bit of a throwback because I think like we need some niche nostalgia.
Okay.
I put the Veronicas on there.
Yes. Love them.
Because they actually are, they just released a new album. So they're a little fresh on my mind. And I'm going to see them in a few weeks, which this is part of my healing my inner child because they're Australian. I never thought I'd be able to see them ever. And they're touring in the US and they're coming to Dallas. And oh my God. I'm just like, I'm going to lose my fucking shit.
No, I would love to see them. Like, what is that? Their song, Forever, of course. And then
Untouched is like,
huge. They're great, honestly. Like, who mismanaged their career? You know what I'm saying? Like, because where were they? But that they would be incredible. That would be, love that pick.
And one of them is a lesbian as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, and they're twins, right?
Yes.
Have you like researched into like twin studies and how like it's way more, if there's twins, it's way like more likely that one of them is queer?
No.
Oh yeah. There's some interesting, but yeah, you see a pair of twins, like, oh, one of them, you know, for sure. Props.
Yeah.
So.
And then like, there's a few people that I just didn't even get to because there's too many, but like Muna, you know, I feel like there's some other like obvious people.
Let me throw in Nina Nesbitt real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, Summer Fling. Stream Summer Fling.
Yeah.
So good.
That's a good, fun, I would never have thought of pick, but I like that. I like that. But yeah, I would buy tickets for that show.
Yeah. And then I do have to say, for the original Lilith Fair, sometimes there was like special, at some points, Pat Benatar showed up and would play. And I, like, I'm sorry, I will apologize for it, but I do need Taylor Swift to come one night. You know what I'm saying? Now, the problem with Taylor is like every time she shows up, the conversation becomes entirely about her. I heard this crazy story like of people who knew her from high school, and like she went to one of her high school, one of their classmates died, and Taylor showed up to pay respects, and everybody there like made it about her, and she just left. She was like horrified. She apologized to the family and left, right? Like, so like Taylor can't be part of the tour. It can't just all be the Taylor show, and it would be. But I do need her showing up one or two nights doing like a like an acoustic set, you know?
Yeah.
Or even I just
like kind of dancing like drunk in the crowd or something.
That too. And I feel, some of that, like for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't think of like a better dream scenario to have discussed this topic that I can't talk about with anyone in my real life. So thank you, Cam, for being here. This was like truly such a delight, and I've been wanting to do this for 2 years. So I'm so glad.
Oh my God.
So
well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Anytime. Love to chat with you.
Okay. What is something coming up on your show that you want to tell people about?
Okay, so aforementioned Fletcher Deep Dive, I swear to God, it's coming. And we have the Tortured Poets Department coming out. And in preparation for that, I'm going to be doing a multi-part, probably series, full deep dive on Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn, too. I am not one of those freaks who doesn't think they had a real relationship. I promise you all that, right? Like, not to call people freaks. But Taylor and Joe, we need to know everything about them, right? Because it's probably going to be at least somewhat commented on this album. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to be doing Taylor and Joe deep dive. Every little theory, every little moment between them, we're going to figure it out. So we're ready for the album.
Love that. And since I am not in the Taylor world in terms of making content, I now have so many great people to point y'all to because I know there are Taylor fans like who listen to this.
Please come through. We have so much fun. I feel like we're fair to her. We criticize at times. We're not blind followers. We dabble in the different conspiracies around her, but we're not we try not to be psycho about it.
Yeah.
Come through. You'll have a great time with us.
I love that. And Reputation's my favorite album. I needed to say that on record.
Yes.
Because I do give every album a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to say that. And I saw Taylor Swift in 2006 when she was, she did a special show for the Walmart shareholders because I'm from Arkansas. It's a big thing in Arkansas. They like all the shareholders, they fly in and they do a concert. So she was on the ticket with Lifehouse.
That was must have been fun.
So I saw Taylor Swift doing Should Have Said No, banging on the trash can situation, curly hair.
Love that. Incredible.
anyway, incredible. Thank you, Cam. I'm going to link everything for where people can find you in the show notes, and I will see all of you very soon.
Bye, everybody.